And Bishalachim, Beth Abraham, December 21st. One of the most serious problems in Kashrus today are the issues of Bishalachim. These problems of Bishalachim, food that was cooked by a non-Jew, even though the food is totally kosher in terms of the ingredients, nevertheless, the Mishnah tells us in Masechet Avodah Zarah, in the second verse, that the Chachamim prohibited such food. This problem of Bishalachim causes problems in our own home, causes problems in restaurants and catering establishments. So let's try to get a little bit of a background as to some of the basic principles concerning this prohibition of Bishalachim, and then try, halach l'maaseh, really try to plug into how to get around some of these problems, particularly in our own home. The Mishnah tells us in the second parak of Masechet Avodah Zarah that the Chachamim instituted a prohibition of Bishalachim. The Gemara never spells out precisely what the reason for this prohibition is. The overwhelming majority of the Rishonim assume that the reason was this was a gezeirah mishum chastos, that the Chachamim instituted this as a fear to let one come to socialize with non-Jews, even though the food itself is going to be kosher, but since it may lead to a little bit of inappropriate socialization, and then one thing may lead to something else, and this is a prohibition of chastos, less chalil this leads to intermarriage. If this is true, if this is the reason, then this would be as part of the general package of different yisurim d'rabbanan that the Chachamim instituted as a gezeirah mishum chastos, that prohibited pasako mishum chastos, which we are somewhat lenient on bisman hazeh, as is evident by some of the things that are on the table today, and we hope. And other things, other yisurim that the Chachamim instituted in terms of stam yeinam, which is also related to chasnos. So Bishalachim falls into that category of yisurim midrabbana, gezeirah mishum chasnos. So we call it an ishur nuchus kashrus because it is a prohibition to eat, but it's not pure kashrus in the sense of that the ingredients are 100% kosher. And afal pi kein, the halacha is that it's a problem. The first basic question we have to deal with is whether this Isser of Bishalachim really is relevant for the primary issue that we want to talk about the babysitters and other non-Jewish workers, whether the Isser of Bishalachim really applies under these circumstances at all. Why should anybody distinguish between workers in contrast to any other non-Jews? So there were a group of Rishonim who distinguished based on a whole series of different possible reasons. There was one group of Rishonim who maintained that the Isser Bishalachim doesn't apply to what the Rishonim used the phrase Avadim Ushvachos, to if somebody has a servant, has a maid servant, a male servant, so the whole Isser Bishalachim perhaps doesn't apply. And the question is, why should that be so? So some Rishonim explained, the reason is as follows. We know there's a halacha in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, we talked a little bit about it last week, that not only is the person himself not allowed to do malacha, I'm not allowed to encourage my children to do malacha, and I'm not allowed to have my avodim, my shvachos, do malacha for me as well. That if somebody is my servant, somebody is my maidservant, I'm not permitted to have them do malacha on my behalf, on Shabbos, and that would be a prohibition min HaTorah. If I ask a regular non-Jew to work for me, that's called Amir Liakum, and that's only a prohibition min Drabbanan, but if it's my own Eben, my own Shivcha, so that would be a Nisim min HaTorah. So there are some Rishonim who say that you see from the fact that the Torah institutes this halacha that an Eved and a Shivcha who does malacha on behalf of the Jew, that's in a certain sense similar to the Jew himself doing the malacha. So this is like the principle in halacha yad Eved ki yad Rabo, that whatever the Eved does, whatever the servant does, whatever the maidservant does, so it's considered to be really just an extension of the Jew's hand. So normally that principle, yad Eved ki yad Rabo, we find that in Hilchos Shabbos, and we find that in Dinei Mamonos, if an Eved finds something, it belongs to the master. If an Eved does work, the money goes to the master. So that principle of Yad Eved Ki Yad Rabo, we do find in other areas of halacha. So some Rishonim invoked that principle in a tremendous chiddush in terms of Bishalachim and said that Bishalachim doesn't apply to Avodim and Teshvachos because it's not really the non-Jews doing the cooking. It's the Jew. Yad Eved Ki Yad Rabo. So it's Kedil, the Jew, is putting the food on the fire. That's quite a chiddush. There were other Rishonim who gave a much more down-to-earth reason as to perhaps why Bishalachim doesn't apply to Avodim and Shvachos, is because the whole Gezeirah was Mishum socialization, Mishum Chasnos, so that makes sense if I go to the next-door neighbor, so there's a fear I may come a little bit too close. Mashiach came when it's an employer-employee type of a relationship, so then probably it's not going to lead to the Chasnos. So that's another reason that other Rishonim gave. The question is, do these reasons really apply to us as manazeh? Is there any grounds to be makel? If we could be makel on this shaila and say that Bishalachim doesn't apply to our quote-unquote modern-day avodah mishvachos, so then we would do away with just about 99% of Bishalachim. Most of us are not going to our next-door neighbors for dinner. Our Bishalachim problems are the babysitters. Our Bishalachim problems are the people who are working in our restaurants and our catering establishments. So other grounds to be makel based on this svara. So the first kula that yad ebed yad rabo, that whatever the ebed does, whatever the shivcha does, was an extension of the adon. So the rishonim gave the mashal. Those rishonim who accepted this leniency in the first place gave the mashal to Hilcha Shabbos. So unfortunately, that kula doesn't really apply for us bizman hazeh, for the following reason: that avadim ushvachas of old meant that the person was really an eved. I mean, he literally belonged. It means there was an agreement in the moment, so there was a contract signed that the eved or the shivcha actually belongs to the Yisrael, and the Yisrael is not permitted in that Torah to have them work on their behalf. That type of a setup we don't have as much as that. A person could have a living together with the family for the last 20 years, but afal pichein, as we all know, he had today gone tomorrow. Sometimes he had today gone today. So the halacha is that our avodim, our shvachos, quote unquote, as much as that, don't have that type of relationship that we can really label them as being an extension of the Yad HaYisrael. That's absurd. That whole principle clearly doesn't apply as much as that. So that one svar that some rishonim extended to avodim shvachos, we do not have a right to extend to our quote unquote avodim shvachos bizman hazeh. What about the second svara, that whenever it's an employer-employee relationship, so maybe the whole svara bishul acham doesn't apply? So although that svara probably would carry over bizman hazeh, that particular svara was really a das yochid. It was one of the rishonim had the Ramban quoted such an idea. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, you don't get the impression that that's the reason that was really accepted lahalacha. So the first reason is highly questionable. First of all, it's questionable whether it's even true, that half the Rishonim held the whole Svara wasn't true, and it's really questionable whether it applies to Zman Hazeh. The second Svara, which may need to make a little bit of a case that it applies to Zman Hazeh, is probably not really accepted lahalacha. So both of the Svaras really fell by the wayside. Are there any other grounds to be made in terms of Avodim and Shvachos? So the Ramah quotes a third possibility. That's something that we'll talk about a little bit more as we go along, that there is a din in bishalakum, that bishalakum is only a problem if the non-Jew is doing the entire cooking. If the Jew is participating really in any stage of the cooking process, that's not considered to be bishalakum. So the Ramah says, whenever you have Vada Mishvachos working in your house, so we have Shishla Yechata Yisrael, that means in the olden days what cooking was, you had something was sitting on the fire. So inevitably a person would walk by and soak the coals a little bit. So we could assume that whenever you have a cooking that's being done in your house, even though the cooking per se is being done by a non-Jew, the odds are somebody, the husband, the wife, or the kid, somebody came by, saw the fire was a little bit low, so they stirred the coals a little bit, so that's probably considered to be Yad Yisrael, the Emsa, and that would take out the problem, that would remove the problem of Bishul Akum. So that's part of the Ramah clearly also doesn't apply on our types of the setups. When was the last time that you walked by the stove and you saw, oh, the food's not cooking so well? Chanan does it all the time. That's a continuation of last week. Right. So, good.
The only question is, though,
is
that according to that theory, you know, that anytime you have a non-Jewish establishment, you have to come in at 3 in the morning.
No, that's what we're going to get to. Oh, we're going to get to the 3 in the morning part. Well, we're going to get. We're going to get there in a moment. So the Ramah is assuming that you don't have a planned Jew coming to start the fire. The Ramah is assuming the guy is basically doing everything, but the Jew is walking in and out. So we have shishleichat echmer bnei habayis. That's the lashon of the Ramah. So the later poskim say that may have been true in Cracker on the 1500s, probably not true in Bergenfield in the 2000s. But we probably don't accept that kula because the metzias advarim is that our cooking process has changed so dramatically that kula the Ramah doesn't apply. So we basically just struck out. We have three possible kulas to permit bishul acham entirely. I think avodim u'shvachos. One was the svar of Yad Eved ki Yad Rabo, that is considered to be like the bishul of the Israel. So the Rishonim said that only applies to the old style of avodim u'shvachos, which we clearly don't have anymore. The second kula was the idea of the employer-employee relationship, which although we still do have that bizman hazeh, but that svar was really a das yachid, and we assume that it was a lo plug, that the chamim prohibited bishul acham under all circumstances, even if this particular akad you're not necessarily going to marry, it doesn't matter. That's also included in bishul acham. And the third svar of the Ramah, that the odds are that one of the Jews in the house is going to give a little bit of a kick to the coal, so that also doesn't apply in our types of modern kitchens. So what are we left with? We're left with the problem. We're left with the serious problem of bishul acham in terms of avodim u'shvachos. There was one other possibility that there was one day at Tosfos quotes in the Sechus of Avodah Zarah that bishul acham maybe doesn't apply to Beis Yisrael altogether. That the whole idea of bishul acham was you're going to go and visit the non-Jewish neighbor and you're going to come a little bit too close and you're going to lay the day chasnus. So maybe that doesn't apply if the non-Jew is cooking in your house. So that was also a das yachid that we generally don't accept. That most of the Rishonim rejected that. So you have a few different possible permutations to kvetch a little bit of a kula, to create a possible kula bizman hazeh, to avoid the whole problem of bishul acham in our establishments with this non-Jewish help. But meik radin, all the kulas are very shver, all the kulas are really das yachid, and many of them don't really apply bichlal bizman hazeh. So let's try to find a little bit of a better kula. We're going to try. We'll try to find some kulas today. That's what we have. Now you're willing to stay, otherwise everyone's going to leave. So let's try and see whether we can find a little bit of a way to circumvent some of these problems of Bishalakam. So we mentioned that the Gemara tells us in Afarizara that the Chachamim, when they were Mesakin, the Yisr Bishalakam, were only Mesakin if the entire Bishal is done by a non-Jew. If the Jew participates in the Bishal process whatsoever, that's not considered to be Bishalakam. So that halacha, that the participation of the Jew in the Bishal process, so basically uproots the prohibition of Bishalachim. So that really applies in a whole different types of series of different situations. So the Gemara says quite clearly that if the Jew is involved in the actual Bishal of the food, let's say like the case of the Ramah, the Jew actually stirs the pot, the Jew actually puts the food on the fire, so that's clearly not considered to be a problem of Bishalachim. There was a machlokas that we shown him, what's the halacha if a Jew doesn't actually put the food on the fire, doesn't actually stir the pot, but all the Jew does is light the fire? Is that considered to be mafkia? Is that considered to uproot, to circumvent the problem of Bishalachim or not? Why would anybody think that that does? After all, that's not the food proper. So the Gemara has that svar of halachas ha'esh by tas'akam. Tas'akam the chamin prohibited also. One should not eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew for the same reason of chasna. So we basically assume that issa doesn't apply in the most circumstances of Zman Hazeh. It's professional bakers. The Rishonim says that the chamin were very lenient on that issa because bread is so important. A person can't live without bread, can't live without cake, can't live without mezonos. So we're very, very lenient with this issa of tas'akam b'zman hazeh. So the Gemara has a kula that tas'akam doesn't apply if a Jew even lights the fire. That's a very famous story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that he used to walk around the bakeries at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning when the non-Jewish bakeries were baking up the bread. He would walk around with his pipe, and he would take his pipe and throw a little bit of the flame into the flame. That would be considered to be like a hadlokas ha'esh, because the Rishonim say that even if the fire is basically there, but you add a little bit to the fire just to make it a little bit higher, even if it's really a mashu miyama, that's okay to be mafkiya the shame pasachon. So for those people who wanted to be machmer to eat pas Yisrael, it was under the ashkacha of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's pipes. That was his practice. So some Rishonim say that kula, the hadlokas ha'esh al yedei Yisrael, is enough to circumvent the problem of Pasachim. So similarly, it's enough to circumvent the problem of Bishalachim. Another Rishonim distinguished. We know that Bishalachim and Pasachim are not the same. That the rules are different. Pasachim is significantly more lenient than Bishalachim. So this was a big machlokes in the Rishonim. What's the din? If a Jew lights the fire and the guy does the entire cooking from A to Z, but the Jew did not look as a Aish, is that acceptable to circumvent the problem of Bishalachim? Basically, what it boiled down to, no pun intended, was boiled down to a machlokes between the Mechaber and the Ramah, that the Mechaber was Machmer and the Shaal B'Shechach was Machmer, that Hadlokas Ha'esh Ayyadei Yisrael is not sufficient, and the Ramah was Meikel, that Hadlokas Ha'esh Ayyadei Yisrael would be sufficient. This is very, very relevant halacha l'maaseh for all of our restaurants and catering, and in many of our homes. Is it sufficient to do the following stunt to get around Bishalachim? Michael Ben Josoy. Oh, very good. We're going to get to that.
When we cook, you know, right. And that's visual. So I think we hold like the spark of that. If you just a little bit extra out, then it should be at least, you know.
Oh, we're going to see. Very good. But this is even better than that, because here what the Ramah is saying is that the Jew basically did nothing. The Jew didn't even take the food and put it onto the fire. Here the Jew did the preparatory stage, the stage of just Hadlokas Ha'esh. Even that's not considered to be Bishalachim. That's a kula gabi kula. So that's what the Ramah is making. The Mechaber didn't like that. The Ikra didn't decide and really don't follow this kula of the Ramah. So this becomes a very, very serious shaila we have today with all of our kosher establishments, that most of the workers in the kitchen are non-Jews. They're doing the entire cooking. So how do we get around the Bishalachim? So the Mashgiach comes in, the Chana Zed comes in 3 o'clock in the morning, turns on the fire. So the question is, does that do anything? So according to the Shulchan Aruch, that does absolutely nothing. According to the Shulchan Aruch, that's considered to be Bishalachim, and one is not permitted to eat that food. But there are more rights that that's okay. There are more rights that have minigas to be Mekel and the Shaila, the old standing minig Ashkenazim, to be lenient on the Shaila. And we assume that that's not considered to be a problem of Bishalachim. Then the Ramah goes one step further. The Ramah says that even if the Jew didn't light this fire per se, the Jew lit another fire, and the non-Jew took the fire from the pre-existing Jewish fire, that's also good enough. That would be the source of the pilot light. I mean, the Jew lights the fire today, and assuming that you have an old-style stove where there's still a pilot, now most of our stoves don't have that anymore, but if you have a pilot light, so the Jew lights the pilot light today, and the Goy could be lighting from that, he could turn on the flame in 6 months from now. That's his hidlik ha'goy may eishel Yisrael. And even though the guy is doing the entire bishul, but it's all nikra al shem, that original halacha is the eish of the Yisrael. So that's the cool of the Ramah.
If it's the electronic ignition that lights the thing, and you turn on the light that ultimately turns on the stove the first time you turn it on, that with all the board, then if you're the eish la eish, so it's the electronic ignition that's lighting the
That's not the Eish means when the Jew does it, there's no Eish yet. So the Jew may be setting up the system, but he didn't light an Eish yet. In the case of the old style pilots, so there's a little bit of a flame already there that was done by the Yisrael.
From the electric to the Eish,
I don't think so. So I think when the guy turns on the electronic ignition, that's called Bishul Akum. That's Bishul Akum Bechilav Yatzov. So I think that's a problem. So those who have the old style fire, so as long as they make sure that the original pilot light was lit by Yidei Yisrael, so that's a very good way to circumvent the problem of Bishul Akum, again following the Psak of the Ramah. There are later opinions in the Achoran on whether we should follow this Ramah L'chatchila, B'diyev, Shazachat, so we're fairly lenient about following this Ramah. Part of the reason is because it is Beveis Yisrael, most of the Shaila, so there was some Rishonim well that it's Mutter without, and we always have in the back of our minds the Avodah Meshvachos Kula, as little as it's worth. So the Lemaise, what we're really relying on is the Bnei Yisrael Yotzim V'Yad Ramah. We're following this Ramah, that the Ramah says that Mikra Adin, Hidlik Yisrael is acceptable. But the Svadim, those high-class Svadim really wouldn't rely on this. There was a Maisa Shahaya about those who know the Y history a little bit. So what year did they switch over to the calf cards? Anyone remember? Before your time or after your time? When we were students, during Yot Kufa, they switched to the calf cards. After our time, right? We were there, there were no calf cards. So the calf cards... 91? Okay, so for those who are not familiar with the calf card system, so years gone by, so the white cafeteria, so if you wanted to eat in the cafeteria, you're in the cafeteria. You don't want to eat, you eat somewhere else. So then they incorporated into part of the tuition bill is that you had to buy a calf card, which entitles you to X amount of money in the cafeteria. So it's either use it or lose it. So the problem was that there were a group of Svaidim who approached the administration and said, you know, it's not fair, because the food is trade for the cafeteria, because it's all mishalakum, because we're not allowed to eat it, because everybody knows that the wider cafeteria, together with all the other hashkachas in America, from the OU to the Stark to the Chav to the ICB, everybody relies on the Sack of the Ramah. So the Sinai boys claimed that the food wasn't kosher, so it's not fair that they should have to play out their money to and buy $1,500 worth of toothpaste at the end of the year.
So much of our
loss,
you sell it.
So he's going into the business. So at that point, so then the briskets caught on to this chop also. Chadosh, everything is, Bishul Akum is only treifman drabon. Chadosh is not treifman at Torah. So everyone came up with their own personal chumra why they can't eat in the cafeteria. Anyway.
The bulb
was a further machlekes. That was a star case chiddush, a behind chiddush, that the poskim seemed to say that the hidlik haYisrael, it doesn't really have to do all that much. I mean, like remember the case of Rabbi Saul Salanta. I mean, the bread was baking anyway, whether Rabbi Saul Salanta was dropping his pipe little sparks in there or not. So many Rishonim say that it's just a heck of the alma. As long as it's a little bit of a Ishtafus of the Yisrael and the Bishul, so that's sufficient. So that was a shayla about the bulbs, about can you have this stunt that you have an oven and the guy is turning on the oven mitchila, but there's a little light bulb inside there. So the light bulb is emitting how much heat? Not all that much. It's not, you're not going to be able to cook your children based on the light bulb. It's there, ad bias goyel. But it's still adding a mashu of heat. So the Star K was of the opinion that that's also acceptable. Others who question whether that's good enough, but that's their famous kula.
Already cooking, that should be all right.
Yeah,
Yisrael comes in the middle.
Right. So I have to see at what stage in the cooking process must the Jew be mishtatif in the actual bishul. So go, Bonim. This is the first aspect of the halacha of mishtatif haYisrael. This is when the, again, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it has to be that the Jew actually puts the food onto the fire, according to the Ramah. So it's good enough if the Jew lit the fire as well. Then the Gemara has a different twist on this idea of having a Jew participating in the bishul, which is as follows. Let's say a Jew cooked the food to the point of Michael ben Jusoy. So we know that Michael ben Jusoy is the cutoff point in terms of bishul, in terms of a Chashabas to some degree. that Ben Jussoy was a bandit, so he was the guy who always is eating on the run, so he never made his steaks totally. So there's Rachel never shown him whether it's a third or whether it's a half, but it basically means it's food which is nechal al yatchak. You can eat it if you have to run away from the, you know, you're always on the run, so then you can eat your steaks that way, but most people wouldn't really eat it that way. That's called nechal Ben Jussoy. So in Hilchos Shabbos, that's called bishul. The person takes raw food and puts it on the grill and reaches the point that Michael Ben Jussoy and takes it off. That's called bishul b'Shabbos min haTorah. So the Gemara has the same idea when it comes to bishul haKlum. Let's say a Yisrael takes food and totally, completely by himself, puts the food onto the grill. There's bishul haKlum, but everybody grills also. Takes the food and puts it onto the grill and it cooks it. It roasts to the point of Michael Ben Jussoy. Then he takes it off. And now the non-Jew comes, blows out the fire, lights the fire, puts the food back on the fire, so the non-Jew is doing the entire bishul from Michael Ben Jussoy to the end. So the Gemara says that's not called bishul haKlum either. Because since the food was already cooked to the point of Michael Ben Jussoy, Idei Yisrael, so that's sufficient, that's significant amount of bishul, and therefore that's called bishul Yisrael, not bishul haKlum. So the Rishonim had a machlokes, what about the other way around? What's the din if you flip it, not flip the burger, but flip the shear? Let's say the guy cooks the food to the point of Michael Ben Jussoy, and totally and completely, he lit the fire, he put the food on and everything, and now the Jew comes in and takes the burger off and puts it back on again, after the point of Michael Ben Jussoy. Is that called bishul, even the mikvah of Yisrael? So the Rashba said that's not even called bishul Yisrael at all, because since Michael Ben Jussoy is called the cutoff point for Hilchas Bishul, so that's it, it's over. So it's the Me'uvas L'Yichal Liskam. Once the non-Jew cooked it to the point of Michael Ben Jussoy, there's nothing you could do to salvage that piece of meat. And the other Rishonim disagree, the Rosh disagrees, the Rambam probably disagrees, that Michael Ben Jussoy is the cutoff point for Bishul, not completely, it means till Michael Ben Jussoy is called Bishul, but after Michael Ben Jussoy is also called Bishul. So therefore, according to the Rosh and according to the Pashas and the Rambam, that even in the other case, when the non-Jew cooked it, it was already royally achila, but the Jew finished it off, that's also considered to be not bishul haKlum. How do we paskin on this? So the Ramah is makel on this also. The Mechaber is only makel b'shas v'chak on this, but the Ramah is makel l'gamrei on this, that if, as long as the Jew participated at some point along the bishul process, either before the Mechaber Nisoy, after the Mechaber Nisoy, that's not considered to be a problem of bishul haKlum. So we had the Shaila a couple of years ago, about a certain type of a food which is a favorite amongst many of the babysitters, that's called the plantains. We're going to see in a little while whether they're a problem with bishul haKlum altogether. But the plantains, they're like big bananas. They're like the bananas. And if you go down St. Nicholas Avenue, so you'll notice that's a very hot commodity. Even in your door. So the big chiddush about these plantains is that in contrast to bananas, you have to cook them. You can't eat them raw. So that's a very serious problem in terms of bishul haKlum. We'll see as we go on why I don't think they're really a problem with bishul haKlum altogether for technical reasons. But let's assume that they're a problem with bishul haKlum, these plantains. So we had one particular babysitter who was a very big fan of these plantains. She didn't want anything else the whole week. All she wanted was to buy 20 plantains from Sunday to Friday, and she was happy. Good. Okay, one time I was really plotting just to try one of them, but I say the truth, to cook a banana, it just didn't look right. So this particular babysitter always knew, as all the babysitters know, that they're not supposed to touch the fire under any circumstances, that any time there's any food that they want to cook, bishul haKlum, even if they want to cook it for themselves, that's a problem, because it's going to may trafe up all your kalim. So our practice was and still is that the first thing in the morning, so my wife would go down, she would turn on the fire, and then whatever the person wanted to heat up. So that was what we used to do. For whatever reason, something happened once. It was a mix-up, and she turned on the fire. And I see there's a plantain that's sitting in one of my pots that's cooking away there. Bishul haKlum happening as we speak. And so my initial reaction was, I asked her, well, is it ready yet? She said, no, not yet. Oh, Baruch Hashem, what did I do? So I could turn off the fire, turn it back on again, or I could just take the pot, pick it up, and put it back down again. So that's bishul Yisrael now, according to the Ramah. Since those plantains may have reached the point of Meicha Ben Jussoy, I can't tell you for sure whether Ben Jussoy was into the plantains, but Nistasha Kol Tzorcha they weren't, because Harayah, she said they were not ready yet. So that's considered to be bishul Yisrael. So according to the Ramah, that's considered to be okay in terms of circumventing the problem of bishul haKlum. Right, but this may be based on the Rambam. The Rambam says that even though something was cooked in Meicha Ben Jussoy, Yesh Bishul until Mishbasha Kol Tzorcha. So the Rambam may be Lishi Tassel. The Rosh and Avodah Zarah writes that even if in Hilchos Shabbos the din is in Bishul haKlum Bishul, but by Bishul haKlum, which is more calm, maybe we have a right to be a little bit more lenient.
To read something that's totally cooked.
Oh, very good. Excellent. Oh, so something that was totally cooked, so then for sure there's not going to be a problem of bishul akum. So if a Jew completely cooked something, then there would be no question whatsoever about the non-Jew reheating it. Whether it's a good idea to have the non-Jew turning on your fires, that's highly questionable, because I can guarantee you that if you have the non-Jew turning on your fires and reheating food, the next thing you know, they will be cooking food for you as well. So, but in terms of strict halacha, so if the food is fully cooked, then it would not be a problem of bishul akum. In theory, it would be okay. Experience has shown us that it's not a good idea. That if you want them washing their pots in your sink together with your pots, and you want them making things in their pots and things getting mixed up, so then not a good idea. Halakhically, it's okay, but practically speaking, it's not a good idea.
In the reverse situation, if it was cooked totally by a guy, and then the Jew wants to...
Yeah, that's not going to help. Right, that's not going to help. Right. But what is included in bishul akum? Are there any exceptions in terms of food? Are all food subject to bishul akum? So here the Gemara has two very important kulas as to what types of foods were never included in the prohibition of bishul akum altogether. So even putting aside everything we've been speaking about, if you have certain types of foods, then there's nothing at all to be concerned with. So one of the types of foods the Gemara says is a davar shenechol kamo shehu chai, a type of a food that was edible in the raw state. So let's say, for example, a non-Jew cooks carrots, or a non-Jew cooks bananas, okay, a non-Jew cooks one of those kind of, maybe makes baked apple or something, a type of food that you could have just as easily eaten in the state of Chai, so that's not considered to be a problem of bishul akum. There are different opinions in the Rishon as to exactly why that's true, but Allah l'maisa, we assume that's true. That's why the non-Jew heats you up water, that's not considered to be bishul akum. It was nechal kemo shehu chai. That phrase, nechal kemo shehu chai, will change according to the time and place. So there may be certain things that may have been nechal kemo shehu chai in the olden days, not true bizman hazeh. So one of the possible changes is the issue of fish. If a non-Jew cooks fish, so in the classic svarim, in the days of the Gemara, that was considered to be a problem of bishul akum. Whereas bizman hazeh, that may or may not be true. That's of course going to depend on the sushi industry. So with my experts in sushi, and again, I don't consider myself, I happen to enjoy sushi, but I don't have a clue how to make it. You just take a little bit of something, a little bit of seaweed and rice and mush it all together in a real funny hat and you cut into little pieces and you're okay. That's basically my impression of what's going on. So not all fish, to my understanding, can be turned into sushi. Anyone here know a little bit more about sushi? Not all fish can be taken to... What?
Eating.
What is an excellent eater of sushi here? Well, so apparently not all fish can be turned into sushi. So if you have a type of a fish that really can be turned into sushi, so lefia makal lefia zman, if it's normal in America to eat sushi now, so then that would not be considered to be bishul akum. Again, it's hard for me to say, whereas many of our fish would still be a problem of sushi. Other things which a person wouldn't even, sometimes wouldn't even think of, other types of foods like pastas, things like that, will potentially be a problem of bishul akum. Maybe other svaras lakum, we'll see as we go along, but pasta, macaroni, those kinds of things are generally speaking not nechal kemo shehu chai. It's always at this point that I tell the story about one time when I was teaching in Stern, and we were learning Hilchos Shabbos at the time, and I was talking about muktzah. I just made the ha'ara that any raw food on Shabbos is muktzah. A raw banana is not muktzah, but a raw plantain, a raw pasta, so that's muktzah, because you can't do anything with it. Not if it's not muktzah, because you can cook it, but on Shabbos you can't do anything with it, so it's considered to be muktzah mamish, and you're not permitted to move it even to get to something else. This is a common problem. People leave things in their refrigerator, in the freezer, and things in the closet in such a way that they'll pick up containers of flour and they'll move macaroni and things like that, which is muktzah mamish, even though it's blocking the edible food, that's not permissible. So one of the examples that I gave of food that no one in their right mind would ever think of eating raw was macaroni. So one of the girls raised her hand and says, no, it's not true that, you know, during finals time, the girls get very, very nervous, so they'll go for anything. So it's very common that at least she was speaking on her own behalf, she eats the macaroni when it's raw. So I asked, I was taken aback a little bit. I said, by a show of hands, can somebody show me, please put up your hand. I won't hold it against you on your final. But how many people here consider it to be normal and they themselves eat macaroni raw? At class of about 50 girls, about, I think 38 hands went up in the air. So I was telling the story.
I hope I didn't.
The Stern girls, yeah. One of those. So I was
put out raw macaroni.
So I was telling over the story in Yeshiva, uptown. So the guys thought that all the girls were crazy. So I said to them, I just want you to know that there's going to come a time that one of those girls with their hands up in the air, maybe your wife, maybe the mother of your children. So,
you know those tradition foods?
Yeah.
People eat them raw.
Yeah, they put them in the
They're not edible cooked.
I don't know.
Yeah, they put it
Ramen noodle salad.
Ramen noodle salad, and they put it into the salad, the very popular salad, Tina today.
And Tina, oh, okay.
Not a burger.
Not a burger friend that hasn't crossed the line yet. I don't know. The fee I'm welcome, the fee has man. I don't know. Enough now? So the rules? Really? Really? Wow. I don't know. Have to check. It was started by the 38 girls in my class. That's not. Oh, we're going to see. Very good. Excellent. If it's mekubal to eat it in the state of raw, that's called nechak moshe chayin. If a non-Jew cooks it, that's not called mishlach. Nechanam, it's just going to change. Ben lekula, ben lechomer.
If not, no, they don't make salads of macaroni.
Right.
Really? It's a very thin noodle.
Oh, so maybe a different. Okay, maybe it may be different. Right, nechanami. It may change. It may depend on the It's going to depend. That's right. We're in big trouble for a lot of reasons, but that's one of the many reasons. Oh, very good. Okay, we're going to get to microwaves. We have to talk about that. We have to talk about microwaves. It's a very important child. If it was already cooked, but if it was cooked by day Yisrael first, then it wouldn't be Bishalachim, right. So again, so a Nechag Moshe Chai is an exception. Water, as we said before, is also an exception. That's the source for the kula of assuming that coffee and tea is not really considered to be a problem with Bishalachim, as I think we may have heard last night. There may be other problems with coffee and tea in non-Jewish establishments. Sheikh Harakim problems, Chaskos problems, other technical problems. In terms of pure Bishalachim, so although there was some Acharon who had a problem with Bishalachim with coffee and tea, that many posts will make on the reason being is that the water is a ikar, that basically it's tasty water, it's flavored water. You can argue whether that's true or not, but those posts will make that coffee and tea is not considered to be a problem of Bishalachim are generally speaking relying on that kula. Well, that's right. Soup is not, well, depends what the ingredient, depends what kind of a soup it is. If it's chicken soup, so then there's Bishalachim on the chicken. If it's vegetables.
You don't eat the chicken and the vegetables. No, but the
once the chicken is trafe, so then if the non-Jew cooked you up chicken soups, then the chicken is trafe, so that trafes up the whole soup.
If you had a little cube and you poured the water in, how is that different from the tea bag?
Is that different? I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not sure. There is another kula that the Gemara gives us, in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins La'alacha, what's not considered to be included in Bishalachim, and that's a double which is Eina Ola Shulchan Alachim, something which is, generally speaking, not fit to be served at a fancy meal. So here Melech, the Poskim say, doesn't necessarily mean Mamish, Melech, in the classic sense of the word. It means a very fancy meal, something that you wouldn't expect to see at the White House, something you wouldn't expect to see at a Chasana. That's considered to be Eina Ola Al Shulchan Melachim. So this is an important kula. Here the Poskim say that, according to many Poskim, that Eina Ola Shulchan Melachim really has to be determined by each particular food. So let's say fish as a whole is considered to be Ola Shulchan Melachim. You serve fish at a fancy meal, but certain types of way fish is prepared, you would never think of getting it a fancy meal. So that type of fish may be Eina Ola Shulchan Melachim. Let's say, for example, fish sticks. So if a non-Jew makes fish sticks for you, so when was the last time you went to Chasana and they said, well, you could have either prime ribs or chicken or fish sticks, so that's not considered to be Ola Shulchan. Are you a Chasana?
Actually, it's not true about kids' meals. You got a wedding, and it's kids' meals. Kids aren't at the Shulchan
Melachim. I think by definition, they're not at the Shulchan Melachim. Yeah, I don't think so. So this shaila, eschat v'ani ma'asker hayom. Right, it's the, if you have a particular food that even though in general fish is Ola Shulchan Melachim, but a fish in this manner is not Ola Shulchan Melachim, so that would be okay. So this happened to us, eschat v'ani ma'asker hayom, a couple of months ago. So for whatever reason, the non-Jew in our house put fish sticks into the toaster oven. So to the best of my knowledge, the fish sticks weren't cooked from beforehand. I couldn't track down the materials exactly, but assuming that the fish sticks are not really edible in the frozen package, so So then you have a potential problem of bishul akum. So we had to be makel. We assume the hapel that fish, the way they are not really considered to be ola al shulchan malachim. So these are the two basic kulas that are important to keep in mind. That's why I think mikras in the plantains are not really a problem of bishul akum altogether, because I have not seen them recently. Maybe in the Dominican Republic they serve them at weddings, but in the team at Cannon Bergenfeld, I don't think that they're normal to serve at weddings. No, fish is not really. That's the thing.
So is pasta then?
Is pasta? Pasta they do serve. Pasta is served at Shmorgasbords. No, it's very right. Serve at kiddushes, right? Should be. We serve pasta at the kiddushes sometimes. Now once in a while, right? Kiddush. Sometimes we serve pasta at the kiddush here. Right? Pasta salad. So pasta is Ola Shulchan Malachim, Man Malki Rabbanan, and our kiddush here. That's right. Oh, that's right. So no fish sticks. No fish sticks in any kiddushes there. Oh, very good. That's exactly what we're leading to. Very good. Very good. Okay, that's what I'm leading into. Cheese is already cooked. The milk was already cooked. The milk, the cheese is all is. No, but it's nechol the way it was. It was nechol in the state of being a raw piece of cheese. Pre-cooked piece of cheese. Let's just try to finish up quickly. Then maybe we'll take this a couple of last questions at the end and try to finish up. Here's another possible kula in terms of bishul akum. That's the issue that was raised in terms of what if the cooking is done without a real flame. So if cooking is done with either a gas oven, a gas stove, or an electric, we assume has the status of an eish in Ochel Shabbos, so we assume it has the status of an eish in bishul akum as well. So that would clearly be subject to bishul akum. There is a big question in the post, and what about a microwave? Is that included in bishul akum altogether? Because the cooking is so fundamentally different. We spoke about this a little bit in the Bas Becholov Shurim. We spoke about this in Ochel Shabbos at one time, and then years gone by. So what's the status of microwaves bechlal in terms of bishul akum? So very often it's not going to be a problem anyway, because very often you're just heating things up in a microwave. So if it was pre-cooked, so then it really wouldn't be a problem altogether. But what if you're really cooking something? The guy who is really cooking something from scratch, something which is eino nechal kumo shulchai, and if olal shulchan melachim, would that be a problem? So this was a big machlok. Oh, that's right. That's the shaila. That's exactly the shaila. So this is a big machlok as aposkim. So Rav Moshe seemed to be machmer in the shaila. According to Rav Moshe, had a psach about microwaves in terms of Ilchus Shabbos, which would probably lead Rav Moshe to conclude that there is a problem with bishul akum on microwaves. And others were lenient. According to something that Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote, one should probably be able to be makel. There's a little bit of a question whether Rav Shlomo Zalman himself was makel. The others who for sure makel. The bishul akum doesn't apply to microwaves because that's not considered to be a bishul with an H. That's not really halachic bishul. So this was a big issue in the different Dunkin' Donuts about whether we can give hashgacha on a place that has the non-Jews heating up cooking up the eggs for us. So eggs in general, they are olal shulchan malachim. Serve not so crazy if you have a nice fancy milchik meal. Drink them more, yeah. Would eggs be considered to be nechol kamoshu chai? Probably not. In contrast to Rocky, that's true. Da-da-da-da-da-da. But I also remember. But I don't know whether in terms of bishul akum. I don't know in terms of bishul akum. Is that really nechol kamoshu chai? It's usually assumed that there is a problem of bishul akum and eggs. That bishul akum, we assume, does apply to eggs. I remember we had a shaila a couple of years ago in California when I used to run the summer colon out in Beth Jacob. So we used to eat breakfast in the shul before the morning seder. And usually we just had cereal and milk, and once in a while they would make a little bit of a nicer breakfast. So one of the non-Jewish workers made us some eggs. So there was a whole question about the pilot light. It was an old style stove. They used to keep a pilot light on from Dairos. But apparently one of the pilot lights went off, and it wasn't clear whether he had put on the new pilot light, and you cook up the eggs from scratch. It was a nice eggs. It was Eila Shulchan Malachim potentially, Eina Nechak Moshu Chai. And the problem was, it was very hard to even divide what the Matthias was. There was a little bit of a language barrier present. So we really couldn't track down what exactly was the status of the eggs was. So what's that lacha? So the shach is making that something bishul akum is mutter. That since bishul akum is only nisad the rabbanon at worst, so then if you try to be mevar, you can't be mevar. So then suffik is lakula. So we all enjoyed those eggs that morning. Suffik bishul akum, held that breath and ate them. But bishul akum would apply to lahalacha to eggs. So this was a shiloh, whether we have to be machmer in the Dunkin' Donuts to insist on the Jew actually starting the, turning on the oven. So there are different Dunkin' Donuts that have different policies about this. So what's the policy here?
They don't do it anymore. It's a
pre-made act. Pre-made act. Oh, okay. But they used to, originally they did. Originally, the one Elizabeth used to allow it, and the one in the five towns did not. Right. So that was the big machlokes between the five towns of Bergen County. What's the din? Whether Bishalacha applies to a
microwave.
Right. So now the eggs that they use are pre-cooked eggs. So that's not doesn't make it sound good. So
that.
So the OU
may be relying on other coolers and factory on cans.
I don't know.
All right. There is one last issue in terms of Bishalakum that comes up after all the facts. Let's say you really did have a problem with Bishalakum. There's no coolers, the guy did the whole thing from A to Z, and it's an Ola Shulchan Malakum, and it's not Nechaz Moshu Chai. So now what? So now the food was taka cooked by the non-Jews. So what do you do with it? So the food is trace. So the din is you're not permitted to eat the food. The question becomes, what's the status of the pot? Is the Bishalakum create a problem of Bliyos? Does it create a problem of absorptions into the pots that actually trace up the pots and the silverware and everything else like real trace for food? So this was a big machlekes in the Rishonim. So there was some Rishonim who maintained that Bishalakum is not really what we would call in the brisket terminology, this is a cheftza. It's not like a tray for food, because after all, the reason why the Chamim asked Bishalakum was a gezeira that you may come to Lidei Chasus, you may come to intermarry. But they didn't really declare that the food is a treif, the food is a chefta shalissa. So some Rishonim said that when do we say that treif of food treifs up kale, and that's a chazer, by the veil, by the osu b'cholav, when there's something intrinsically wrong with the food. Whereas here, there's like an isra and the gavra to eat it, so you should indeed bishalakum in the state of real bishalakum. But the fact that some of the tam, some of the taste of bishalakum is now absorbed into the walls of your pot, into your silverware, into your ovens, so that's not considered to be a problem. And most of the Rishonim disagree with that. Most of the Rishonim held that the Chachamim made a gezeira called Bishalakum. So the formulation, the reason of the gezeira was Mishum Chasnos, but the formulation of the gezeira was that it's called Machalos Asuros Midrabanim. It's a tray for food on a level of the Rabbanim. So this is the shayla in the poskim, how one should be knowing in this. So Lechet Chiva, we would try to kasher our kelim under these types of circumstances. So that, unfortunately, sometimes happens. Every once in a while, that's what prompted me to give the shiur, because every once in a while I get one of these calls about the person who didn't take all the precautions, didn't explain to the non-Jewish help, and they came home and the non-Jew cooked them up a delicious dinner of chicken and pasta and rice and soup and the works, and now their entire kitchen is treif. So according to many, many Rishonim, the answer to that question is yes, that their entire kitchen may very well be treif, that they have to start kashering, not the entire kitchen, whatever came into contact with this, they have to kasher the pots, and they have to kasher some of the silverware. So this is a problem. Sometimes if it's a shas el chach, there may be certain grounds to be mako, because after all, we're not 100% convinced that there was really bishalakum in the first place, because it was, quote-unquote, about a mishvachos, and it was with Eis Yisrael. So maybe, and there are some Rishonim say you don't have to kasher pots, but lechatchila we would want people to kasher things if a real serious mistake was done in terms of bishalakum. The things to really keep in mind in terms of circumventing this problem is to the best thing to keep in mind is to always make sure that you participate in the bishul and to get into the habit of that the non-Jew really should not be turning on the fire really under any circumstances. Because unfortunately, once they have free reign in terms of turning on the fire, so then you inevitably will have a problem of bishalakum. And the other thing to keep in mind is that meikra then bishalakum doesn't apply to dvarim which are nechach moshu chai, and bishalakum doesn't apply to foods which are in olah shulchan aruch.